don't need no education. Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Pete Hegseth. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's always such a pleasure to join you on Saturday mornings. And I'm actually joined in studio once again with Education Nation producer Mark Durkin.
Good morning, Rebecca.
Yes, good morning. Are you on your second cup of coffee yet?
Oh, the third.
Oh, boy. We're going to be bouncing today. Actually, that might be good because we're going to be discussing a school subject today that at first mention might actually strike our listeners as being irrelevant in 21st century America. But we're talking about the study of Latin language in the classroom.
That's correct, Rebecca. This will be a very informative show today. And when you think of speaking Latin, it doesn't rank at the top of people's minds as a language to study, especially in light of immigration patterns that we're seeing here in 2017. But the academic benefits are simply amazing. And we have a wonderful guest joining us this morning who will help us see why Latin curriculum is advantageous to your child's education.
Exactly. And here today joining us on the program to discuss this ancient language and why it remains relevant today is Stephen Hoopshire. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you, Rebecca.
We are so happy to have you here, Stephen. Stephen's a Latin teacher at Liberty Classical Academy. He directs the middle school program and has plenty of insight to share with us this morning. So again, thank you for joining us. We're looking forward to hearing from you, and I know our listeners will be too. But let's start by talking a little bit about the history of Latin.
Oh, no, Rebecca, you're gonna just kill it already. I can just hear it. Latin, as dead as it can be. First it killed the Romans, and now it's killing
me. Oh, that is so great. I think you got to say that one more time for our listeners. Can you say that one again? That's hilarious. Yeah.
Latin, as dead as it can be. First it killed the Romans, and now it's killing me.
I hope the students at Liberty don't have that memorized. Yeah. I'm just kidding. No, that is hilarious. But that is our first notion, is it's a dead language. Why would we ever study it? And yet we know that Latin helps make up 2/3 of the vocabulary of modern English, including French and Spanish and Italian. So even though Latin is not spoken as an active language today, could you give a general overview as to why Latin is a key language in today's modern English?
Well, as you mentioned there, from a simple vocabulary perspective, a lot of our words are related to Latin. And if you have a grasp of what they mean in Latin, it will give you a better grasp of the English vocabulary and be able to pick up new words and concepts, whether you're doing medicine or theology or working in the legal field, mm-hmm. out of different areas, mm-hmm. that it can help you, or just reading good books.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later in our show as well. We're going to probably get down into a little bit more of the examples of some of those things. But the development of Latin, the foundation of it, can you tell us why? Why did we end up with Latin at the foundation of French and Spanish and Italian?
Well, you have to understand that the Roman Empire was around for 1,000 years, 500 as the before the empire, and then 500 as the empire, mm-hmm. and so they were widespread over Europe, where mm-hmm. our historical roots are as a culture, mm-hmm. and so they influenced all of the nations that developed into the modern European nations.
Okay.
Even our English alphabet adopted the Roman alphabet, mm-hmm. beginning in the 800s, so the 9th century.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that, too, is we actually have a few more letters than the original alphabet. Is that correct? How did that come about?
That's correct. And those things, some of them were borrowed from the Greeks. The Romans themselves borrowed Y and Z from the Greeks. Hmm. And then in the Middle Ages, and the Renaissance scholars introduced the letter J, and then the letters U and W to cover some of the sounds that were used for double letters in Latin.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting to me. I would have had no idea that. So it was basically almost a simplification. They were doing one letter in place of two in Latin, so they had to develop these new letters. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
And then, of
okay.
course, later on, we're going to be talking about how there's actually more meaning in much of the Latin language with fewer words. So that would make
right.
sense about the alphabet.
That would make sense, wouldn't it? Exactly. Well, I know that our listeners are probably learning already. We've only been like 5 minutes into this show, and I've already learned several things about why Latin is important. And so we're going to take a little bit of a break here, and we're going to shift gears. And we're going to look at what the immigration patterns are, or understanding what the immigration patterns are here in the U.S., which are heavily concentrated with peoples that speak Spanish and Arabic. We're going to answer the question of why we would continue advertising Latin in school curriculum. We'll discuss the benefits of Latin today. So stay tuned.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
And welcome back to Education Nation. I am your co-host, Mark Durkin, and today we are talking about the ancient Latin language, and despite the fact it is not actively spoken today, its influence and benefit is felt across much of Western civilization.
That's right, Mark, and many subjects that are studied in American schools today are actually filled with the Latin language. And our LCA Latin teacher, Stephen Hoopscher, is here with us this morning to help us understand the priceless influence of Latin in the classroom. So earlier in this segment today, Stephen, you mentioned that Latin is connected to the medical field, the scientific field, the legal field, several others, technological and theological fields. So why don't you talk a little bit about that with us and give us some examples?
You know, last year when I was at the doctor's office with one of my kids, and I was talking with the doc, and they mentioned how glad they were that they had studied Latin for 2 years when they were, I think, in high school or junior high.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Huh. And they said it just really helped them a lot with this matter of vocabulary and be able to pick up and know what the different terms were and what things
right.
were being spoken about.
Right. That's
so
great.
Did you want some examples, Rebecca?
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to hear some of the examples.
Well,
yeah.
Think about the word intravenous.
Mm-hmm.
There's a combination of two words. Mm-hmm. It means in the vein, and that's right out of Latin. Intra okay. and venous.
Okay.
How you would say that.
Okay.
There's different Latin
venous,
dialects.
Which would be the vein. We would pronounce that venous, but you're
right.
saying that the proper would be in Latin venous.
Right.
Okay. Okay. That is very interesting because when you stop and think about that, intra. We have that at the beginning of many of our English words. So if you know that intra means in, then you know that you can help you understand other words that maybe you've never heard before that have that same beginning.
Right.
Correct? Yeah. Why don't you give us some more examples?
And you need to realize that in medical field, most of the stuff is abbreviated.
Sure.
Today.
Sure. Okay.
So, I mean, now in human anatomy, we'd have things like femur, fibula, mm-hmm. radius, tibia,
yeah.
ulna, all those
yeah.
bones.
But those are all Latin.
Right.
Interesting.
And for abbreviations, they might write on a prescription or in your chart notes, AC,
mm-hmm.
Antecibum, before food or before you eat.
Okay. Interesting.
Or bib, B-I-B, period, short for bibe. Which is like Bibo, I drink.
Okay.
Dieb alt for diebus alternis every other day.
You know, wow.
And so on.
There's, okay, yeah.
If you want to see a ton of them, go and look on Wikipedia.
Yeah,
know.
Yeah. Well, and actually, I used to work as a speech pathologist
okay.
over at St. Paul Ramsey Hospital, which is now Regions. And I used some of those, what were you calling them?
The abbreviations,
I guess. I used some of those and when I wrote in the charts, and I knew what they meant, but I did not know that they had the Latin. I didn't know the Latin background on them, and how much more they would have made sense to me if I would have known what they really represented.
I think the common thing here, too, that we're seeing as a theme is just how much meaning, again, you can pack in just a few abbreviations or words.
Yes. Yeah. That is really astounding to me. So that's the medical. Give us some examples from some of these other realms, the scientific realm or technological. You pick it.
Well, in the, you know, the science, I mean, there's multiple realms there, yeah. areas, right? Uh-huh. But if we look at biology, mm-hmm. Biology uses what would be, the formal name would be binomial or binary mm-hmm. nomenclature. So giving two Latin names to a living creature
okay.
or organism.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So for people, of course, it's Homo sapiens,
mm-hmm.
And which includes the genus and then the species names, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Both of which, by the way, genus and species are both Latin words.
They are too.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, if you looked at in mammals, if you looked at the weasel family, for instance, the genus would be Mustelidae, but that includes not only weasels, it would include also mink and otters and skunks.
Okay. Interesting.
And especially with plants, this system of giving two Latin names, this binomial or binary nomenclature, was developed by Carl Linnaeus, which he published it in 1753 in his book Species Planetarum. Now, he wasn't the first one to come up with this, but he was the one who really developed it and popularized it and made it the industry standard.
Okay.
You know, we mentioned the legal field, and there, in our legal tradition really goes back to the common law tradition, which goes back centuries in England to mm-hmm. English common law.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of legal terms that over the centuries have been used. So some of the ones, if you've been a foster parent, you'd probably heard the term guardian mm-hmm. ad litem.
Mm-hmm.
Ad litem means for the suit.
For the suit. What do you think that why would that have been just because they're taking care of the...
Like for the lawsuit. The, okay. So a guardian ad
litem for the lawsuit.
For
this case. Okay, yeah. Okay. Interesting. You know, it makes so much more sense when you know the meaning behind it.
It does.
Yeah. I know one of the words, this is one of my few Latin words that I know. I remember this from when my kids were studying their vocabulary way back, is shepherd, is pastor in Latin. And it gave me such a different perspective on what a pastor is or should be when you understand that the word pastor means shepherd and shepherd is pastor, you know, and I just thought, wow, it just fulfills the meaning so much more to know the Latin background of the word. And that was something that we talked about as well earlier when we were discussing Latin, the three of us. You talked about how it really helps the students gain a historical perspective on their lives. And actually, Mark, I know that you had a couple points that you wanted to make, too.
Right. So. We had mentioned earlier, too, that how Spanish and Arabic might be the languages of choice to really learn, given the immigration patterns we're seeing here in the 21st century. You know, Stephen, do you see how the study of those modern foreign languages, could there be an exclusion factor with Latin because of that and other core classical languages? And if so, can that undermine or begin to replace our understanding of the history of Western civilization?
Mark, I think that's, you know, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think that learning Latin for us is really bound up with history. And people who forget what their roots are, where they've come from, what their past is, they really lose a lot of their future. And when Latin was dropped largely from school curricula in the last few decades, it was commonly said, well, let's just replace it with a modern foreign language that we can use here that'll be practical for the kids and easier. Why not do something that's easier instead of so hard like Latin? It's just wasting all this time. But, and you mentioned Spanish and Arabic. And so if we take these, I think that somebody working in the, let's say, the hospitality industry would really need to know or be helped by knowing Spanish and Arabic, because as it's well known, the hospitality industry is heavily reliant on immigrant labor. But what we're talking about in that case is a job skill, and jobs change, and so do the skills needed for them. Mm-hmm. And that's different.
Yeah. Good point.
That's different from having an understanding of one's life that takes into account the historical context of our present existence. Mm-hmm. So in other words, Latin can help contribute to seeing the big picture of how and why things are the way they are. Again, it's not magic. Taking some Latin isn't going to fix everything for you. But when you work at it over time, in combination with other core elements that comprise a good education, they help a person to figure out who they are, mm-hmm. why they're here, mm-hmm. and the best way to live their lives given the opportunities that they have. And at Liberty, we think those kinds of questions are important mm-hmm. to our kids.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And you're talking about empathizing, too. So when you understand the thought of people in centuries past, I mean, those are kind of the building blocks to help us understand society and where it's at today and mm-hmm. why it's there today.
Mm-hmm. Mark, if you can go back and read some of those things that the people said in their own words, and we can. We have thousands of documents from those times. We can read what husbands wrote when their wives died. We can read what wives wrote when their kids died. We can read all these different things, and it can help us to see a lot of things on how people were in some ways the same as us. But as I point out to my class, it can also help us to see areas where it's different, where mm-hmm. their expectations of dying and their reasons for wanting to die and their expectations for life after death could be very different than depending on what one's religious beliefs are from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make a good point that I hadn't really stopped to consider, that if Latin just gets left behind, then we really do lose an entire element of our historical background. And, we always talk about at Liberty how we want to use primary documents in history, and we're actually going to read the Constitution as it was written. We're going to read what Thomas Jefferson said. We're going to read what the Federalist Papers say. We're going to go all the way back and read the Magna Carta. But you make a good point that without the knowledge of Latin, there'd be so many documents that you couldn't even possibly understand. And so then we lose that primary document that really gives you an insight as to exactly what they thought, rather than you're more subjected then to an author saying, well, this is what they thought during those times.
Able to go back and read it for yourself and say, no, that's not what that person said, because I went and read it.
Right.
Yeah, in the West, our culture is put together from Christian religion and the Greek way of thinking, history, and Roman government. And you need Hebrew and Greek and Latin for all of that.
Yeah.
Now, we're taking a key part of that with Latin that picks up on a lot of this and has been very important for our history.
That is really a good point.
And I would imagine, of course, that the importance of being able to understand documents historically is greatly aided by the fact that in Latin, you're reading much more slowly and the wording is much more important. And we're going to talk more about that and much more when we come back in segment 3 on this morning's edition of Education Nation. Stay tuned.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Well, welcome back to Education Nation, where we have Stephen Hoopschner from Liberty Classical Academy in studio with us. Stephen is our middle school Latin teacher at Liberty, and we are talking with him about the importance of Latin and the value of Latin in a school setting. And right before the break, Mark, you brought up the fact that we tend to read Latin more slowly because there's a lot of meaning packed into that. And it's interesting because with the English language, it's such a word order dependent language. And so you mentioned earlier too, Stephen, that it's a difficult language to learn. And one of the reasons why it's difficult is because it isn't word order dependent the way we are used to with English. And so it's definitely taxing and challenging to a child's cognition, and it's good for them to have to study this. So tell us a little bit about how you do this. I know that you aren't the one responsible for teaching Latin at the lower school level at Liberty, but you know a lot about how it's done and the importance of memorization and such in the teaching of Latin. Tell us about that with the lower school.
Well, our lower school program, like you say, does do a lot of memorizing of Latin words and of conjugations and verb charts and so on. Think of a pronoun chart that we would do in English would be I, you, he, she, it, we, you, they. Mm-hmm. Well, they do a lot of chart learning for Latin.
And I'm going to just interrupt you right there, because if I was a listener right now, I'd think, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? For lower school kids, that sounds so boring. But you know what? It's not done in rote memorization way. It is done with songs and chants like we so often do in the lower school in learning other pieces of information. So you might hear them do that, those endings that you just said, in a very quick chant. They might have some actions with it, as we so often do. I know that the lower school Latin teacher makes it very interesting and engaging and exciting for the kids, right?
Well, I know that my son certainly enjoys what he's doing with Latin.
Yeah, that's great. So you said that it's divided into two parts, and you mentioned one part. What was the other part? Did I miss that?
Oh, the other part would be in the middle school that I
teach. Okay.
You know, I have a question, too. You know, as far as the lower school program, you know, words like grass, park, milk, I mean, these are words that are predominantly given to us from the Germanic language, which makes up a quarter of modern English.
Yes, you know, and really English is in its base, it's a Germanic, one of the Germanic languages.
Right, and I think what's fascinating, you think of these simpler words and they're being learned by students at such a young age. Does Latin memorization, I mean, which helps make up two-thirds of modern English, does it complement or does it hinder the dual development of the simple vocabulary that we learn just being Americans?
Well, Mark, you know, I'm not a child psychologist, but I don't know that matters. Because when
I mean,
it
would
comes
there be
to,
confusion? I guess is what I'm saying.
These are English words now. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of these words that are already here in our vocabulary, right? So I look at it that as far as learning the Latin and memorizing this, that you're learning to set up a different category in your mind. That there's other things that we don't normally do in English, and here's another way of communicating, and it's something that you didn't know before. And you have to create this whole space or category in your own mind for saying, oh, well, here's how we do it in English, but over here, now I'm learning, this is something else called Latin. Mm-hmm. And once you've got that ability to do that and you realize, oh, there's this other world or these other ways of doing things, then anybody around me ever does it, it helps you to see and to be able to appreciate people in different places or different times doing things differently than we do.
And actually, I think that, you know, as I'm thinking about this question, Mark, generally speaking, what we know about learning of languages is that the younger the person that's learning, the less likely there is to be that confusion. And that's where, you know, kids who are growing up in dual language homes, they're picking up on both of those languages. Now, they might develop both of them a little bit more slowly than a child who's only learning one language, but they do learn them much more quickly and easily the younger they are. And so having them learn a language in lower school is going to be really beneficial to them, and especially when there's so much crossover. I mean, that's what I'm hearing you say, is that so much of the Latin vocabulary that they'd be learning in the lower school is actually part of our English language anyway. And so just it gives them a better understanding of kind of the background of those words and where they, the deeper meaning. Would you agree with that? I'm talking to you, Stephen.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I had a question for you, too, Stephen. You know, you are working in the middle school program. You know, what's your role in the program, and what do the students learn to do with the Latin, even at the middle school level?
Well, so at the middle school level there, my job is to take and to put everything together and to make this really come together and work in their mind. So I want them and I help them to learn to read and understand Latin in Latin. So to be able to pick up a Latin text and be able to read it, and without translating every word into English, to be able to come away and understand what's going on in that text and what it's saying. Then, as part of that, then as they get better, the more after they've been taking it for a couple of years, especially too, then we were talking about the reading slower, and to be the point is to be able to read carefully, and to say, now let's look at this text here, and what is it actually saying in context, mm-hmm. because you don't realize most of the time that how much we tend to fill in the blanks and add things on and shape things. But sometimes it's important to know what exactly was said, by whom, about what. And for instance, that would be very important today if you were a lawyer to look at exactly what the law says and exactly what this person did or did not do or did or did not say and exactly when it happened and so on. And that is, it's as, and I'm a trained pastor too, and I've spent over a decade in various roles of ministry and congregational pastoring, and in sermon preparation and studying the Bible. That's a very important skill too, to say what actually does the Bible say. But that skill, anyhow, of close reading, whether you're going to do it for as a lawyer or a pastor or a literary critic, it's very important there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Critical thinking, really. I mean, that's what it comes down to, in a sense, is that you're helping. It's one way that we can help students learn to be more critical thinkers and more careful thinkers.
And that comes out as a result, a natural byproduct of what we're working on here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very interesting.
The abstract and the empathetic thinking, as well as you're really pondering and thinking about what words you're reading, what sentences you're digesting.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. So, Stephen, how would you say that the way LCA teaches Latin is maybe different from other schools that might teach Latin?
You know, if you do a survey and look at different schools that teach Latin, you'll see that there's a variety of ways that are done and of levels that are reached. So I would say, first of all, number one, we do teach the whole language. By that I mean we don't just have a class in Latin roots, but we teach the kids to read Latin in Latin and to get them so they understand it there. Secondly, I would say that Latin is taught from a Christian worldview. So yes, we do learn about the ancient Greek and Roman gods and goddesses, but whereas other courses might say, well, which of the Roman gods would you like to be like? We would say, how would you compare and contrast a Roman god with the God of the Bible?
Excellent.
And then lastly, we have interdisciplinary projects and other interdisciplinary things to help the kids make connections.
Okay. All right. We have to cut it off there. I'm so sorry, Stephen. It's been very interesting talking with you today. And we thank you for joining us. And we look forward to joining you next week on Education Nation.